You call the president an Indonesian Muslim turned welfare thug and a racist in chief. I mean, yeah. Is that the kind of...
That's the way he's behaving.
But in Obama's America, the white kids now get beat up with the black kids cheering, yay, right on, right on, right on, right on.
If you are a religious person, you don't want someone telling your child that it's okay to be gay. It's as simple right. as that.
I'm gay and I don't molest any children. What do you think?
Well, I say you're lying.
Do right. you pray that, you pray that I'll die tonight?
If you're a homosexual, I hope you get brain cancer.
You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. It took me about a year.
I like turtles.
Well, hello and welcome again to another Amron's Live podcast brought to you over Pride48.com. And for the benefit of those listening recorded, this was recorded live and will be presented over the, you know, the normal podcast stream at a normal, at the normal pace of things, whatever that means. Now, before we get started today, I do have a brief announcement, and that is that next month, the end of next month, the end of March, is the third anniversary of the Amron's podcast, and I will be having a competition. Now, I'll be giving more details as the rest of this month plays out, but essentially what it will be is that in each recorded podcast during the month of March, I will tell you about one or two or more facts about New Zealand, and I will ask a question. All you have to do is write down the question and the answer, and then at a time, and I'll tell you when later, you have to submit the information to me, and I will take a random drawing of all the correct entries, and that person will win a Kiwi prize pack, which will basically be some random things that are from New Zealand, like maybe a magazine, and of course there will be candy involved, naturally. And bits and pieces like that. Now, I'll be having more details about it as this month finishes, but that will begin with the first recorded podcast in March. So that will be a month of observation. I say observation rather than celebration, but I suppose that's a matter of opinion. Now, as for today's topic, I called it Does It Matter? And what it's about is this. There's a recent commentary that was published at advocate.com written by Chandler Burr, and he suggested that the way to win GLBT rights is to point out that being gay is an inborn characteristic, not, as our religious opponents put it, a lifestyle choice, as if they evaluated the options and chose to be heterosexual. When people believe being gay is not a choice, it's that it's an inborn characteristic, they support us overwhelmingly. That's what the evidence shows. Yet many GLBT people hate describing sexuality as an inborn characteristic. They argue that sexuality, and even gender, is fluid, and in any case, saying that we're born this way means we're claiming to be helpless victims of our rights ought to be ours regardless of how or why we're GLBT or T. And some even reject labels altogether, like, for example, gay singers who say that they're singers who happen to be gay. So does it matter if we're born or made? Is rejecting use of the word gay a form of internalized homophobia? And if we're all just humans who vary, how do we take on our religious opponents who think that we've chosen our sexuality? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And joining me to discuss that are Stephen from Wisconsin. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
And also Brother Sinaitis. Hello, Brother Sinaitis.
Good evening.
Now, I did have a late request to add Larkin, and I'm not sure if he still wants to join or not. I was in the midst of playing the theme and things like that, so I didn't quite have a chance to answer at the time. I'm just going to Skype him. Oh, okay. He says yes, that was quick. Okay, then. I will add him to the call, as soon as I can remember how to do that. Oh, yeah, I remember now. See, that's one of the bad things about going so long without doing it. You can't remember how to do all the bits and pieces.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Joining us now is Larkin. Hello, Larkin.
Hello.
We hadn't gotten very far yet, so it was good time.
No, I went out for a hike today, and I just got home. Whoa, I had to turn that off. There we go. I went out for a hike today, and I just made it home.
Oh, well, good timing then. Larry Dean said that learned that using Skype for all of this is like riding a bicycle. Well, that's not exactly true, as last week's podcast shows. You forget a lot of the little details about how these things work. But I don't know if you were listening to the stream before we started, but I was basically talking about what the topic is and about does it matter if gay people are born or made. And the specific motivator for this particular topic was an article on at advocate.com. And I should say I put a link up in the show notes that are up now. And in the final show notes, it'll still be there, of course. So anybody who wants to read the article can just go to amrinspodcast.com and then click on the link. But the thing about this whole topic is, first of all, what the gist of his argument is that by talking about the strategies that have been employed so far to try to win GLBT rights, and especially marriage equality, have failed because the right wing is able to come in with the same tired techniques that they've always said, like, think of the children. And whenever they do that, they end up beating us. We haven't won yet in any of these races, unless you count the bare win in the state of Washington, which was not even marriage. And he says that if we make it clear to people that being gay or lesbian is an inborn characteristic, much like left-handedness, that it doesn't make sense to discriminate against us, and as the evidence has shown through polling, people are more likely to support us. Now, of course, that's a contentious subject, as I was saying in the intro, because there are people who think that that's nonsense for a variety of reasons. So the first question is, if we are born or made, does it matter?
Click, cricket, cricket. No. I would say only for the point of your argument from before, because it's truly not known why we are. I mean, true. They haven't found a genetic factor yet, and it's people like to pigeonhole people and say you're this, you're that, and I believe in, you know, shades of gray and rainbows.
Yeah, well, that's not an uncommon reaction. And you're right that there has been no gay gene that's been discovered, at least not yet. There is a whole bunch of scientific evidence that indicates that there is a pre-birth influence on sexuality. And there's a whole bunch of things. Birth order is one of them. Hormone levels are thought to be another. But none of them by themselves explain why people become gay or don't. And in the absence of a specific gene that indicates why sexual orientation is, that argument will continue. And of course, when I was an activist, we always used to say, well, it doesn't make any difference if people are born that way or not, because religion is a choice, and yet that's protected under civil rights laws. However, that argument hasn't worked very much for us so far.
Well, it's easy for them to say it's a choice not to be.
Well, yes, and here's the thing about that. If they can convince voters that being gay is a lifestyle choice, which is the phrase they always use, that means that it can be taught. That it's something you can learn. It's something you can be recruited into. It's something that you can be coerced into. Whereas if it's an inborn characteristic of some sort, and I prefer the term inborn rather than genetic, because as we've already said, there's no genetic proof yet. If it's an inborn characteristic, then it's something that can't be taught, it's something you can't learn, it's something that you can't be recruited into or coerced into, which makes their arguments pointless. Because what if it was taught in schools? What difference would it make? Because nobody was suddenly going to learn to be gay. You see what I'm saying? If they succeed in convincing people that homosexuality in particular is a lifestyle choice, then they can then go on to convince people that children have to be protected from us.
So, well, I have a question. Stephen?
Yes?
Was being gay ever an issue for you?
No. Not at all.
And I don't know how old Brother Sunatus is, but very. I'm 43. I'm 43. You're very old.
I'm the senior one in this chat room.
Okay.
Why, how old are you?
Unless Lord Byron just checked in.
Well, we'll say you're 60 plus then. I'm assuming that it was an issue for you.
I'm not there yet.
Well, you're not giving it to us, so we have to hope about it.
I'm 56.
56. So you're just senior a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a little bit older.
And for me, part of it was where I grew up, you know, rural, you know, small town, north, you know, Midwest. I did not accept that. It took me a long time to be able to accept the fact that I was gay. It didn't, you know. And so this thing that they say it's a choice and that you, well, if it's a choice, then you should be able to choose not to be and it shouldn't be a factor in your life, correct?
Correct.
One would think.
And so, I mean, again, they're not, well, who knows how many of these people, I'm always under the belief that people who push the hardest against it are. You know?
Yes.
They hate themselves for it, and, you know, it's homophobia an extreme.
Yeah, the old case of me thinks he doth protest too much. Yeah,
because
exactly.
Who gives a rat's ass?
Well,
and you know, and that's the world.
Enough to.
But that's the world we're moving to.
Yes.
We're not there yet, but we are moving to that world faster than any of us growing up, you know, in the 70s and 80s and prior would have ever thought.
Well, that's probably true. And there's ample evidence that younger generations are far more tolerant than their parents and certainly more tolerant than their grandparents.
Yep.
But it is going to be a while before they're in the majority and in a position to influence public policy, and waiting for them to do it could mean waiting a generation, essentially. And I don't know that many people really want to wait that long, particularly when there will continue to be ballot fights in state after state. I mean, my home state, the Republican candidate for governor, has pledged to push through a constitutional amendment to ban not just same-sex marriage, but also civil unions. Which seems to me a good reason to vote for the Democrat, but anyway.
You know, and again, they're going to continue no matter what. Like we've talked before with other minorities, how long did the blacks have to fight?
Well, yes, that's true.
And then like you talked about last week, I think it was Daniel who said that if things are forced too fast, then you get these weird-ass policies that are enforced. Like the Jim Crow laws and kind of things.
Well, don't ask, don't tell was the result of pushing change quickly as well.
Yes. And so sometimes for us, it might not be in our... We need to fight everything. I'm not saying we shouldn't fight every single thing they do, but we have to be careful sometimes how hard we push. I'm going to be shut down for that now.
Well, there's probably
it's a way to be like, I mean, my thing is to get out and vote and be vocal and be out and be open. Everybody who knows a gay person can't necessarily always say that in the end, you know, can't,
well,
aren't
that,
me.
That actually touches on something. One of the, one of this guy's arguments is Chandler Burr. He was saying that the methodology, if you will, of the pro-marriage equality folks was to say, we need to tell our story. We need to make sure that ordinary voters understand us and our story and so on. And he's saying that's all well and good, but that doesn't win elections because people, many people who, quote, knew our story still voted against us, and speaking specifically about California, but also Maine, and that the way to counter that is to basically tell a larger story, which is that sexuality is an inborn characteristic. Now, the problem with that is that there are plenty of people who believe that it's not a fixed point on a compass, that somebody isn't born a Kinsey 6 or a Kinsey 0, that they might be various points on the scale at various points in their life. And for that matter, gender isn't even necessarily fixed, and people might be a bit more fluid over the course of their lives than is generally acknowledged. And if that's the case, how could you argue that it's inborn? Anybody have a thought on that?
Come on, the other two. Come on. I don't know if anything in life is 100% set in stone. I mean, as we grow and we develop, you know, hopefully our whole lives we continue to grow as people and change who we are because of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the more experiences you have in life and the different experiences and broader sense of experiences you have in life, you know, the better you are at maybe finally deciding who you are, which before maybe you didn't know.
True. I guess what I'm getting at is things like, for instance, I'm right-handed and have been my entire life. I was undoubtedly born right-handed. Now, I can, with a lot of effort and a lot of patience, force myself to make letters with my left hand on a piece of it, write it, basically. It doesn't look very good. It's sometimes not even terribly legible, but I can sort of force myself to do it. And with enough time, I could probably force myself to write left-handed. But I wouldn't be left-handed. I would still be right-handed, but having taught myself to write left-handed. So how can we necessarily say that something as, well, important in one sense as sexuality is so fluid? Could it not be that we are in fact fixed at a certain point, but sometimes we like to be at a different point?
Train ourselves. I guess I don't know if it's necessarily all that easy, because there's not necessarily a right answer to any of this, because we're all unique individuals, and so how one person might be not isn't necessarily true for another. You know, I guess until they can find a genetic cause for gayness, for homosexuality, whatever we want to call it, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there aren't any answers.
Well, that's probably true, but the point of that particular article, and basically the question, I suppose, has got to do with tactics, because we don't want to keep losing, obviously. We don't want to keep having our rights rolled back in various states. And the thing of it is, the marriage equality debate is, in some ways, it's not all that important, because it only affects the people who want to get married, obviously. But it's part of a larger debate, because the same people who are trying to prevent marriage equality also don't want any legal recognition whatsoever of same-sex relationships, which is another matter again, because that's a bigger circle. And they also want to take away rights that already exist, almost without exception. There may be a few anti-marriage equality activists who don't want to do that, but by and large, the people who are the loudest in fighting same-sex marriage also want to take away civil rights laws and you know, various related laws like that, anti-discrimination laws, anti-violence laws, and so on. And some of them want to go even farther, as we know.
Well, and I would say not just against gay people, but anybody who's not like them.
Well, that's probably true, but they can't get away with being overtly racist anymore, whereas they can get away with being overtly homophobic.
Well, but they do in other ways that you see certain, you know, people have a certain belief, you know, believe that illegal immigrants in this country working, you know, it is there where it's allowed to be, you know, where they're allowed to say things aloud.
Well, that's probably true. And illegal immigration is sort of a thing unto itself, because it's got this whole mythology around it, I suppose, as race once did.
Yes.
And I'm certainly not saying that the U.S. is a post-racial society, because it absolutely is not. Racism is endemic in the U.S., and I think it's foolish to say otherwise. But I don't think that these same people, and I'm talking specifically about the Christian right, the far right in many cases, how I don't think they can get away with saying, we want to take away the rights of African Americans. They can possibly get away with saying, we want to take away the rights of illegal immigrants, because that's a politically popular thing among a lot of people, not just on the right. However, nobody is standing up to say, you can't say that about gay people. And they do all the time. I mean, you've got the one anti-gay activist who said that gay people should be put in prison and forced to undergo reparative therapy. You've got another one who said that gay people are rapists who can't control themselves and would attack soldiers if Don't Ask, Don't Tell was lifted. You've got another one who has openly called for the execution of gay people. In America, we're talking about, not in some other country. So they can't say that kind of thing about somebody of a different race, even if they're illegal immigrants. They can't say they should be executed. And they can't say that and get away with it. So I guess what I'm getting at with that is that we have a strong opponent, and we are the only ones standing between them and their victory.
Well, it's part of why they can't say anything. Well, part of why they can talk about us that way, because we are largely an invisible group.
True.
We don't have for the most part, because we're being over general here, characteristics that you can say someone is and someone isn't. You know, it's easy to tell someone who's black. Or, you know, maybe Jewish. I'm wondering if Jews might be a little bit similar, because you can't necessarily tell if someone's Jewish or not by looking at them.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why some gay people have been able to, what's the word I'm looking for, fit in, is because they're able to, putting quote marks, pass.
Yeah.
Where perhaps somebody of a different race or different religion may not be able to. I don't know. It's one of those really interlocking and intertwining sort of things, because on the face of it, you say, well, we should argue that sexuality is an inborn characteristic, and therefore it's irrational to discriminate against somebody based on that. Because you wouldn't discriminate against somebody with blue eyes or left-handedness or whatever. But once you start doing that, then you're saying, okay, then somebody either has to be gay their entire life from birth to death, or they have to be heterosexual their entire life from birth to death. And we know that in the real world, that's not necessarily the way it works. It doesn't. Maybe that undermines our own argument. Let's bring Brother Sinaitis into this, because he didn't get enough to say last time. That's because Daniel was on, of course. But
I guess my thing is, I'm not real certain. Well, first off, the religious right, you're not going to – there's no story you can give them that they're going to want to accept you. They just don't want to have you around. And I mean – well, I mean, Pat Robertson still is spouting some of the most – anti-black stuff I've ever heard, with his, you know, like his remarks on Haiti just recently.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just a half a step away saying slavery was great. And so, I mean, I don't see them liking us, and I really think a lot of the conservatives really just don't want to have us around. And that's, and there's nothing you can, no story you can tell them that will make it acceptable to them.
Well, that actually has been brought up in that article as well. He says, look, I'm not interested in trying to win over the fundamentalist Christians. They're lost. You cannot win them over. They're not going to listen to us. They're not going to like us. Forget about them. And we already have a certain percentage of the population that will support us regardless. They may know us. They may just, you know, maybe intellectually, maybe the right thing to do, what have you. But what he wants to reach is the 20% that's somewhere in the middle that doesn't go along with the fundamentalist Christians necessarily, but doesn't go on our side necessarily. They need a reason to go one way or the other. And the fundamentalists so far have been universally successful in pushing them to their side by implying that being gay or lesbian is a lifestyle choice that one could easily choose to be, in quote marks, correct. And therefore, they win. And he's saying that if we can convince these 20% that being gay is no more strange than being left-handed, that it's just as inborn, then those 20% will vote with us. And there is some evidence for that. And what I meant by that, and I mentioned that before, is that there have been surveys that have shown that people who believe that homosexuality is not a choice, that it's inborn, or certainly fixed at a very young age, are almost 3-1. Will vote for us in a margin of about 3-1. Whereas those who believe that homosexuality is a choice are likely to vote against us by a clear majority. So
what's that clear majority? Is that like 60?
Yeah, 60-40, something like that. And the problem is that, as I was saying, that the fundamentalists have been able to sway that 20-odd percent in the middle to go their way. And they've been doing it, as I said at the beginning, by, you know, think of the children kind of thing, because they're promoting this myth that we can teach kids to be gay.
Well, I guess what we're down to then is we need to find that biological cause for it. Otherwise, unless you actually can find the gene or the set of circumstances or whatever it might be that would cause it.
Yeah.
Well, we do have an idea of what the circumstances are in some occasions. I mean, yeah. it often has something to do with brain chemistry, the hormones that were present in the brain at the time of your development in the womb.
Yeah.
They often have, there's a correlation with that that leads to homosexuals tend to have been more, how do I put this up? Had more estrogen present at the time that their brain was forming, and it feminizes the brain to an extent. I guess that's the best way of putting it.
I understand this, and I'm on the same side, but my concern is what they say is there's a strong correlation. It doesn't prove. Do you understand the difference between there being a correlation towards something in 100%, because it doesn't happen in all instances. So they're going to say, well, why here but not there? And that's why you need to come out with a rock solid evidence saying this is what causes it. Period.
And that's the thing. Science
and part
isn't
of me,
that. It's
and part of me doesn't want that.
Well, you know what I've always said is that if they ever do find the gay gene, you'll suddenly see the Christian right all in favor of legal abortion.
Mm-mm.
Totally. Yeah. If you can do a test beforehand, I don't know. And part of me doesn't want there to ever be, because they're going to be able to decide beforehand. You know, it's going to be, you know, genetic engineering to get. And I don't know. I have an issue with that.
Yeah, you know. No, I understand that completely, and I actually share that. And even though I'm joking about saying that they would suddenly embrace abortion, I'm actually certain that they would. They would say,
"Oh, I agree with you." Yes, because that, you know, this child isn't going to be born with you know,
it's not going to be born.
His eye is perfect, you know.
Yeah.
Let alone that he might be a child molester, he might beat his wife, or might do all these awful other things to society. They don't care about that, just as long as he's not gay.
As long as he's heterosexual, yeah. Yeah. There were some interesting comments in, yeah, exactly, in the chat room I just thought I would share. The first one was that Gravitas was saying, when I was 20, I used to hate drag queens or transgendered, but through exposure, I learned to accept them, and went on to say, you'll never win... Oops. It jumps whenever anybody makes a comment. people stop commenting. You'll never win via logic of religion with the LGBT push tolerance in education, which Larry Dean agreed with and others have as well. And I don't think that's true. And of course, Wes Stone from the Live It Up podcast also added, does anyone ever corner the Christian right on when they made their choice? And I think that that's an excellent point, because this whole idea of sexuality being a lifestyle choice is like, you know, you can imagine these fundamentalist preachers sitting around thinking, should I be gay or should I be straight? I don't know. Oh, that's a tough one. I guess I'll be straight. You know, they know damn well that it's not a choice. I mean, it's so bloody obvious. But the thing I said before, and we used to say this all the time when I was an activist, what difference does it make if it was a choice? Religion is a choice. You don't have to be Catholic or Baptist or Jewish or whatever. You can be anything. You can be everything.
Well, I have another question as far as, are we just pawns? I don't know if they really care about us necessarily. We're just a pawn to further their agenda.
Well, I would say yes, partly because we have what they imagine as a threat has enabled them to raise millions, hundreds of millions of dollars over the years on this imaginary threat. And it's enabled them to organize. It's enabled them to elect the candidates that they want to various offices around the country. And so I think in that sense, they're using us because they don't really care. Some of them, I should say, don't really care one way or the other about us or about our rights or about whether we're allowed to marry or not. But they want to use us to get their ends. I was just having a look at the chat room again, as I do. And like Astara says, the Christian right will tell you that there was no choice to make for them because they are normal. And that's absolutely true. And that's actually one of the main counters or whatever that they will say. They'll say, well, of course we didn't choose because we're normal. You chose to be abnormal. You chose to be against God, in quote marks. You chose to be contrary and all that sort of thing. And it's a really good point, I think.
I chose to accept it.
Well, exactly. I mean, all of us at some stage have a choice to say, well, I'm going to be who I am and live my life openly and honestly, or I'm going to try to cower in the darkness and try to pass, maybe even marrying a woman so that maybe they won't know, that kind of thing. That choice is certainly in existence, but it's mostly because of the hatred and the bigotry that we've experienced over the centuries.
Well, straight people have it, we won't say easier in life, because there's a roadmap for them. There's, you know, centuries of, you know.
Well, that's actually an interesting point. Stephen, when you were growing, because you're the youngest, that's why I'm picking on you.
All right.
When you were growing up, did you take for granted that someday you'd grow up and marry a boy and live happily ever after?
Take for granted.
That you were going to. I shouldn't say take for granted, maybe.
I figured by the time I was ready to do so, it probably would be a possibility.
See, that's interesting, because when I was growing up, I just assumed it was never going to happen. And I never even entered my thought. I never thought about having a wedding. I never thought about, you know, all the legal consequences of being married, because I just assumed it would never happen and that I would have to go to a lawyer and draw up 30,000 documents in order to get something that was a pale imitation of marriage. That's just what I assumed growing up.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Brother Snatus, because you're slightly older than me.
Actually, I mean, that really wasn't even a concept.
Yeah.
I mean, ongoing relationships, you know. But then, I mean, I grew up in Montana where there really wasn't any role models.
Hmm.
Or at least the ones that I'm beginning to discover that were there, you didn't know about. You know, the two spinster teachers that lived together.
Yeah, there's always one of them around, isn't there? Yeah. And what about you, Larkin? You didn't grow up with the expectation of being able to marry, did you?
No, never even. You know, I don't know if I've even thought about it. You know, it was not part of my... But I don't know if it's most of guys' fantasies anyways. Is that not something little girls are taught to grow?
Well, in terms of the wedding itself, yes. I think you're right.
None of that was ever really... I remember when I was young and I would think about futures, but I knew I had somebody in my life, but it was never like... The person was always nondescript, if that makes... You know what I mean? It was, you know... They didn't have a sex to them or anything else. It was just, you know, there was a house and this and that and a job and whatever when you're a little kid thinking or dreaming.
Yeah.
But there was someone else there, but they never had a face. They weren't anything. They were just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of grew up a bit like Larry Dean. It was said in the chat room that I grew up thinking that long-term relationships were possible, but not marriage. Union blessings were common, though, even in the old days. And that's the way it was for me as well. And Larry and I are fairly close in age. That, yes, you could form a relationship with somebody and you could stay with them for the rest of your life even. But the things about marriage, you know, as a legal institution, that was something that was never going to happen. Even when I was an activist, and I would have been in my 20s at the time probably, I just assumed that marriage was unobtainable. So why even bother with that? Go on to do other things. Wes Stone said that in my teens and 20s, I looked around and would get frustrated that there weren't any good role models for long-term relationships, which I suppose is another issue in itself, because I remember when I was an activist that we used to get frustrated that there would be people who would get into a long-term relationship and then disappear. You know, they weren't around the bars, they weren't part of organizations, they were just...
Well, do we need to look to same-sex couples for a standard?
Well, that's an interesting question. Well,
We all know couples who've been together, gay or straight, that you can tell that they've been together forever and are still in love.
True.
And, you know, So I kind of think the role models were there. It's just not identical to maybe what we wanted.
Yeah, and I think that for those of us who are somewhat older, the fact that society was against us in so many ways, in the legal discrimination everywhere and all the rest of it, that we probably wanted same-sex role models more because we wanted to have some sort of proof that it was possible.
Whereas nowadays, validation.
Yeah, exactly. Nowadays, it's really quite different because, well, first of all, you can see same-sex couples getting married in some states and some countries. And it's not such a weird concept to think of a couple being together for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Whereas I think even 20 years ago, the thought of that was almost unimaginable. Not the 20 years so much, but 50 years is what I was thinking. I don't know, Brother Snaith, again, since you're fairly close to my age, not to dwell on that. what about this issue of role models and so on? Was it? Do you think it was more important in the olden times to have same-sex couples as role models than it might be now?
I really don't know. Actually, I really think role models are probably always important. I mean, there's got to be somebody showing that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in that sense, it probably wouldn't matter whether they're straight or gay.
No.
And Stephen, what do you think?
It's a good question, and I'm not sure.
I think the funny kind of thing is potentially gays are going to get better role models and the straight kids are going to get worse ones by Paris Hilton and all the, you know.
They've always had bad role models, haven't they?
Gays are always good. I mean, to be a gay role model, you'll have to have succeeded where the straight ones are just there.
Yeah. I think one of the coolest things that ever happened to me, I went to the march in Washington in 92, and I was staying with my friend, and he got invited. He was working for the Smithsonian at the time, and we got invited over to this couple's house for a celebration during it, and they'd been together 50 years, a gay couple who had been together 50 years. And so they're out there.
Yeah.
You know, we just need to find them and, you know, start showing that.
When the chat room token was saying that the wedding industrial complex needs to get on this, we read that the total average wedding spend is about $40,000. And I've often thought that. I thought if you could get commercial interests lobbying for it, the Republicans would fall in line, but apparently not. And can I say as well, on the subject of how much people spend, growing up, I always thought it was obscene the amount of money that people would spend on a wedding. And I mean, granted, they expected it to be their one and only wedding, even though the odds were against them. I just thought it was absolutely obscene to be spending that much money on that event. And that was another reason why I never really thought about it, I suppose, irrespective of the fact that it was illegal. I just thought that it was absurd to spend that much money when there were people suffering, and even the couple needed the money more than, you know, they needed to spend that much on a party or something.
Yeah.
You were a child of the 60s.
Yes, exactly.
Well, but that's part of society, you know. Not that long ago, I know someone who got married. The amount of money they spent on their wedding, and their wedding, they weren't even married a year.
Yeah.
Well, and I can remember him bringing his wedding album. He had like this professionally done book of all the pictures, and it's like, oh my! It's like I can't believe how much money they spent, and they didn't even last a year.
Yeah, well, maybe the way to do it is the way that Nigel and I did, or Vera and Gooch, for that matter. You're together for a few decades, and then you have your ceremony.
Yeah. By then, you're common law, anyways. Common law?
Well, in New Zealand, it's called de facto, and it carries with it certain rights. Any couple that's been together for 3 years or more, they automatically inherit half of each other's property without having to do any more.
no questions asked.
Yeah, without a will or anything. It just it gets a bit complicated for other things like hospital visitation potentially. If somebody's in an ICU, the de facto alone wouldn't necessarily get them in. Although in New Zealand, it's not as big a deal. They tend to say, I'm his partner. They say, okay, then this way. No, they don't throw up barriers as American hospitals apparently often do. But, yeah, I mean, some of the things that they're talking about in the chat room are things about how role models lead to more substantial relationships in the long run, how the lack of them might, for instance, lead to more superficial relationships or more promiscuous lifestyles and so on. And there's probably some truth to that, because if you don't see an alternative, you know, why would you choose a committed relationship if you don't see it?
Well, I think we just have to look at the straight community, and I don't know if they're necessarily any more committed than the homosexuals.
Well, look at the divorce rate alone shows that.
Well, even beyond that, how much infidelity really happens, that's never talked about. So is it better in the gay community that you're upfront and honest about it, saying that that's just sex and we don't care about it? We're here together to form a relationship with each other and build a life together. Or do you let it destroy?
Or do you just keep it all hidden? Like
hidden. Which ultimately destroys. So not, I mean, because then there's the lack of trust and all the other things that start to build. And
well, my personal feeling...
So potentially...
I was just going to say, my personal feeling is that that perhaps gay couples overall are more honest than their heterosexual counterparts, because they can make these decisions and choose what they want to do. As long as they, you know, are honest with each other and follow through on what they say they're going to do. But whereas heterosexual people apparently are expected to choose lifelong monogamy, and they're not allowed to negotiate barriers. I mean, when I say not allowed, I mean societally, not legally, obviously. Although in some states they could potentially give the partner grounds for a divorce if they went fooling around on the side. But that sort of gets into a whole different aspect of choice, I suppose, because couples are choosing the way to live. And, of course, that drives the Christianists even more crazy.
Well, for them, I don't know. It always goes back to me, for them, it's not about what they're really doing. It's about control.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's... They want to control because their God is all-powerful and says this is the only way to live and this is what you're supposed to do. And it's all about control.
Yeah. And power. You know, exerting power over people. It's not simply controlling, but having that power, able to dictate, and they want to extend that to society in general. I've in past podcasts, I've mentioned George Lakoff. I think that's how you pronounce it. Who has written a series of books about framing, political framing. And one of his, I think his first one is called Don't Think of the Elephant, or something like that. I actually can't remember that, but the point is, he always talks about fundamentalist Christians as having this notion of a strong father, and that everything has to sort of fall behind that, that the strong father is the head of the family, as Jesus was the head of the church, and everybody has to obey the father, and all that. Now, it's a particularly narrow viewpoint, even though there's an element of truth in it, which is one of the reasons why he's, I think, been successful in promoting his view. There are alternative ways of looking at it as well. But if he's true, if he's right, that most of fundamentalism is based on this strong father figure thing, then one of the reasons why they wouldn't like gay people is they would see us as rebellious children because we're not doing as we're told. Does that make sense?
Ooh, yeah. I have a question on that strong father thing. Is that a leftover from the time when we were agrarian and you needed to survive?
I don't know about the father figure so much, but...
But, you know, that strong central figure that... like each small group of people probably had that strong central person who made most of the decisions for the group.
Well, there's certainly there have been arguments that it's based on the need to ensure the transmission of genetic code for the next generations, going way back before civilization even. Marriage is primarily a property contract, despite what the Christians mm-hmm. say, and it always has been. The whole symbolism in the marriage ceremony, the bride, the woman wears white to symbolize her virginity, that she's never had sex. Therefore, the husband will be able to pass along his genetic material to this woman because she's not sullied with somebody else's genetic material. And in a traditional wedding ceremony, the father, who owns the daughter's virginity, symbolically hands it over to the husband by giving her away. And that's all about giving her virginity over to the new husband and his the family he's about to start. So there's all of this property stuff that gets
in. And in the old days, dowries?
Dowries, yep.
Yeah.
And that's, we still see that today in the fact that the bride's family is expected to pay for the reception. That's a dowry.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. But anyway, that's a bit off topic, I suppose.
Well, I have a question as far as a lot of our viewpoints are very U.S.-centric. And how is this viewed around the rest of the world? I mean, we all know in certain places in Africa, you know, how it's viewed. But how about other first world countries as far as, you know, how does most of Europe...
Well, with certain exceptions, certainly the U.S. is alone in its institutionalized homophobia. And most of the institutions are the further east you go in Europe, the more likely you are to encounter institutionalized homophobia. But if you look at the West, Western Europe, most of them have some sort of partnership thing going on now. Some have outright marriage. Some only have some sort of civil union or equivalent. And... gay and lesbian people can serve openly in the militaries of all the NATO powers, as far as I know. I don't think there's any that they can't. Mm-hmm. And yet the U.S. struggles with things that other countries have solved 20 years ago in some cases.
Yeah. My question then comes down to is when did the gay rights movement start worldwide with Stonewall?
Well, most of the, as far as I know, most of the countries take that as the start of the modern gay rights movement, yes. But many of the countries were already well along the way before that. Australia and New Zealand were not, I should add. They were.
But they're much smaller populations, though, correct? And that's easier?
Well, they were. They're smaller populations, and in that sense, it makes it easier to change. That's true. But it wasn't until 20 years after Stonewall's before the movement really started. Mm-hmm. Homosexual law reform in New Zealand, which decriminalized male sex, because female sex was never illegal. Wasn't until 1986. And then, of course, within a few years, they'd passed a national anti-discrimination law, and now, of course, we have civil unions and all the other stuff. So it started moving much faster after that.
But you also don't have states, right? You have one national government.
New Zealand does. Australia has states.
So... I'm just trying to get my head around, you know, the rest of the world and how they came to terms and how they moved forward. And it's like I'm trying to figure out where the U.S. is in this whole continuum, because we all can agree 40 years ago worldwide, I mean, you were prosecuted, you know, period, for being homosexual. You know, it wasn't, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe 50 years, I don't know where to cut that time off, but it wasn't that long ago that, you know, I read a lot of historic fiction, and one I read took place in England during, like, 1930s or so, and, you know, just the trouble you got in back then for being homosexual, if it was out, was phenomenal. You know, I mean, in that... You know, I mean, I just think the U.S. is a little behind, but I don't know if we're necessarily as far behind. I think the religious right is pushing hard, but I don't think they're winning as often as they used to.
Well, it depends on what you're talking about specifically, because, among other things, they have been winning on marriage equality. The only places where it's gotten through, where it exists, are places where there haven't been voter repeal efforts yet.
Yes. Was it Vermont or New Hampshire where they just...
New Hampshire. They voted turned it back, yeah.
Where they can't, so they can't... It won't go out to the public.
Yeah, at least not now. I don't know if that means they can never do it, but certainly not yet. And it's certainly not impossible that it could still come up for a vote in Iowa, although it looks like it won't be anytime soon.
You know, and again, with time... I mean, I'm one of those people who... Unless you live in a state where you can lose your job for being gay, we have it pretty good. Is that a bad thing to say?
Well, no.
you know what I mean? I remember what it was like when I was a kid. And comparatively, I'll always go back, I think we're moving incredibly fast as a movement compared to some previous, you know, minorities trying to get. And it is my belief it will all come, but we still, I will always say we need to fight everything that's thrown out there, though. I mean, I'm not saying we should just lay back and let whatever happen. We still need to fight, but I think in the end we will win.
I think you're absolutely right, and a sense of perspective is important. I grew up in Illinois, which was the second state to repeal its sodomy laws. Connecticut was first, and we lived just south of the border from the first state in the Union to pass a comprehensive gay rights law, Wisconsin, which for years would talk about itself as the gay rights state because it was the only state that had done that. And we've come a long way from then.
Yeah. And it will continue again. I mean, we cannot give up. But unfortunately, I don't think there's one easy answer. There's not one single thing we need to do. We need to continue... As many different gay people as there are, there's many different interest groups and different things that each of us thinks important. Each of us need to continue with that. As long as we're being out there visible and doing something about it, it will happen.
Yeah, and
you know,
people have to do what they can where they can, too.
Because I know in the past we've talked about what is the one thing that we need to do, and there is not one thing. We need to continue doing many things and... You know, moving forward here a little, moving there forward a little, and
yeah,
it will happen.
Hey, Stephen, who is Apollo Ono, and why is he cute?
Apollo Ono is a speed skater for the United States.
Okay.
He is very attractive.
Is he
However, I think he got silver this year.
Okay.
The first year, which was when I was a sophomore in high school, I think he got couple of gold, but I could be wrong. That's so long ago that I don't remember anymore. But
that long ago, huh?
I graduated from high school 7 years ago. To me, my frame of reference, it's a long time ago.
I wish I could remember 7 years ago.
I can remember. I was in like grade school, maybe sixth or seventh grade. I'm trying to think. In 1980, when the I would have been junior high when we won the gold medal, when the hockey dream team, gold team, what was it called?
They called it the dream team, didn't they?
Dream team, yeah. When they won against the Russians, those nasty, awful, terrible Russians.
Yeah, I remember that year. In fact, I was just thinking about it the other day, and I was trying to remember the name of that brother and sister speed skaters that year. They're from Wisconsin, weren't they? Lake Ellis? Not Lake Ellis. What do you call it? West Ellis? What were the names? I cannot remember. I wish somebody could.
You know, there's this little thing called the internet and Goggle.
I know, but where do you start? Wisconsin Speed Skater 1980. I suppose he could.
Olympics. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's incredible. You might have to dig a little, but I bet...
Somebody I can hear in the background is typing, trying to find out who it is.
That'd be me.
So I got the computer back, so now I can look.
Eric Heiden.
Eric Heiden.
I forgot what his sister's name was.
I remember the name Eric Heiden.
At the time, I thought he was cute. This was a long time ago. But the speed skaters have the most enormous thighs.
And they wear the tightest tights.
Yeah, so much the better. Yeah, and for the record, I did find that by Googling Wisconsin Speed Skater 1980. And the first hit was Eric Heiden. So there you go.
It works.
He was, he was born in Madison, Wisconsin. But isn't West Allis in Madison or part of Madison or something?
I've never been to Madison.
Now, Stephen would know.
What was the question? Sorry, I was looking
Where's
at
West
picture.
Allis? Isn't that part of Madison? Oh, no. That's
no, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did I think he
was?
Maybe he lived
I was born in West Allis.
He's drooling over Apollo, so you have to give him his moments.
Sorry, can't help it.
He's aged pretty well. Well, Eric Heiden. But anyway, I suppose it's only natural we should talk a little bit about the Olympics since they're going on at the moment. But I actually think that on the subject of large male thighs, we'll wrap up this episode. And why don't we give you all a moment to plug something or to give a shout out or whatever it is you want to do. And we'll start with the latecomer, Larkin. I was just looking at the chat room.
Sure, give me what do I want to plug? Shit. I don't know if we swore yet, so I swore now. So now you can put out your explicit.
Big Fatty's already plugged shit in his green poop episode.
Don't eat. Don't eat blue.
Yeah, apparently.
Frosted.
Is it red?
Never knew. Huh?
Is it red? I can't remember.
I think it was blue.
Oh, yeah.
Blue. I don't know. I don't have anything right now. Sorry.
No, that's all right. And Steven?
I don't have anything either. I can't think of anything.
Well, this is going to be an easy one. The show notes are going to be short.
I have to pull up.
And Brother Sinatus?
I guess I can be reached at brothersinatus@gmail.com.
Okie doke. Actually, I don't usually put, what do you call them? Email addresses in show notes so that the spam bots don't find it.
No. I got something I can plug. I'm going to plug the Dragon Podcast. I don't know if you guys listen to it.
Archer's
he lives in... Huh?
Archer's mentioned it.
Yeah, he lives in...
Yeah.
He lives just outside of Pennsylvania, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in South Jersey. And so he's got a new co-host who's very ADHD.
I can relate to that whenever I do one of these live shows. All I have to do is look at the chat room, I'm gone.
See, I can't look at it because then I stop. So I stop thinking.
Well, I try to look only to see if there's a question that somebody is asking to talk about in the chat room. And then occasionally, like this time, I've tried to bring some of their points into the overall discussion. But, you know, it's not always easy to... I don't know, disconnect from the chat room, I guess.
Totally.
But anyway. Well, that will wrap it up for this episode. I'd like to thank you all for joining me. And goodness gracious me, we were talking for a long time. I didn't even realize it until I just looked at the clock. edit. But I, at this stage, am planning on being back next week. It will be again at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. 7:30 Central, 6:30 Mountain, 5:30 Pacific, or 2:30 p.m. Friday on New Zealand. And hopefully on time. We'll see how things go. But that is it for this live edition of the Airman's Podcast. Again, boys, thank you for joining me. And
not a problem.
We will talk to everybody on the stream later on. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Airman's Podcast at airmanspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at airmanspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed on a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.